show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past.
It's a place where I met my wife and my three children were born. And to this day, I'm so proud to call KC home.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Alex with a basket catch. They're going to send the runner. His throw, a great one! Alex Gordon with a tremendous Gold Glove play.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future.
With the fifth selection of the 2012 first-year player draft, the Kansas City Royals select Kyle Zimmer.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I am Troy Olson, and the gentleman that's moving all sorts of around down there on the bottom bar is Mike Lingle, and next to him is Jeff Byrne. Apparently I missed the memo that it was White Day on the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
It's White T-Shirt Day, Troy, and I'm disappointed that you didn't come along with it.
Well, after, maybe I'll have to change on our first break or something.
After Labor Day, no less, so it's a bold move by Engle and myself.
Well, there you go.
You know, I don't subscribe to convention, so...
You never have, Engle, and that's one of the reasons why you're on this show.
Yeah, this show is anything but conventional, that's sure. That's for sure.
That's the point.
So, the Royals managed to... beat up on the White Sox again, which is always a good sign. You want to see a team that you expect to have pretty well intact for next year be able to beat divisional rivals. They took down the White Sox and amazingly pretty well had their way with the Twins. I mean, Were you guys as surprised as I were that they played that well against the Twins?
I was more surprised about the Twin series because they've struggled against the Twins for whatever reason all year. And then those first two games, those were satisfying games to watch because everybody was hitting. In the first game, the only guy who didn't get a base hit was Mike Moustakas, and he at least walked. And then everybody hit in the second game. And the pitching was all right. The second game wasn't as good, but, you know, they still got two wins out of it, and they should have won a third, but things got weird in that third game. And, you know, but two out of three is not bad.
Things got weird.
You know, there's probably, I don't know if there's even three teams that I could pick in Major League Baseball right now that I'd rather be a Royals fan than a fan of that team. But I think at this point in time, the Twins are one of them because they are not a very good team right now, and they do not have much coming in the way of talent for them in the future. So they're going to be in a rough spot, and hopefully this was just a sign of things to come, and in the next 3 to 5 years, we can beat up on the Twins like they have beaten up on us for the last decade or so. So that was good to see, definitely, and I think the Twins are in a bad spot. And actually, I mean, the White Sox are doing pretty well right now, but as far as talent coming up in the future, I mean, they're an older team, so they're going to be kind of in the same boat. So, I mean, we keep saying it, but this division, you know, this is just kind of showing us that this division is going to be, it's not just all talk. It will be up for grabs in the next few years, and the Royals can make a run if they can get their head out of their backsides and do it.
He says with such animosity. The last two nights, however, you know, we talked all season about how the Royals have no starting pitching, right? No starting pitching, but they've got this awesome bullpen. Except the last two nights. Holland blows his first save, and then dear old Timmy gets hit last night, and they both result in losses of games that very possibly or should have been wins. Any concerns with anything we've seen the last two nights?
I'm not. It's only two games. It only looks like it's a pattern because it happened in two straight days. If it had been the start of the week and the end of the week, it wouldn't stand out as much. You know, they get hit. I mean, nobody ever has a 0.0 ERA. So it doesn't matter who you are. You could be, you know, Cy Young reinvented. You're still going to give up some runs. It's just part of the game. So, I mean, Collins has gotten hit a couple times. Early in the year, he got hit pretty hard in a couple of games. And he made whatever adjustments and came around and, You know, he's had a very good year. Holland had the same problems. He had, you know, part of them I think were injury related, but he did lose some control early on and got hit and went on the disabled list. And since he came back, he's been great. So, you know, this is his first blown save. It's really the first time he's come really that close to blowing a save. So it's not like, you know, Jonathan Broxton, where he's walking the tightrope every time out. He's had pretty clean saves most of the time. So there's no concern, you know, the rest of the year or long term for either of them for me. You know, I think there's still big parts of the bullpen going forward.
Yeah, and I think you look at Tim Collins, and he's someone who a lot of times when you hear people talk about starting pitchers, you know, they talk about the body type of the pitcher, you know, how big they are, can they sustain, you know, that mythical goal is at 200 innings, you know, they have the body type to be kind of able to sustain that many innings and that much out there. And you look at Collins being such a smaller guy, and, you know, he's done pretty well with longevity, but he's also, I mean, he's already pitched 67 innings, which is exactly how many he's pitched the season's almost over, but, you know, he's pitched 67 innings, which is exactly how many he pitched last year, and he started to kind of wear out at the end of last year, too. So, I mean, that's just something where, you know, the better the Royals pitching staff gets, if it ever does get better, the better he will get, because they'll be less reliant on him throwing more innings and appearing it seems like he's in every single game, you know? I mean,
yeah.
It seems like every time you turn around, they're bringing in, Tim Collins to make a relief, even if it's just one out, you know, he's still out there quite a bit. So, I mean, I think if those numbers can go down, say he was at 50 innings right now, I mean, he probably doesn't get hit quite as hard in some of these games where he has, but then again, like Michael said, I mean, it just happens to everybody. So ultimate point of that being, I'm not really concerned about either of them. And, I mean, Holland, his first blown save, people blow saves, it happens. I mean, unless you're juiced up in Greg Gagne for an entire year, then you're going to blow a save.
Did you just say if you're juiced up on Greg Gagne? Is that like being juiced up on Keith Richards?
I have no comment on that.
I might have to clip that and keep that. That was pretty good. I like that. So not much of a minor league wrap up, as there's only one minor league team still playing.
There's not much going on. No, there's just you know, Omaha. They're in the PCL finals. They're down 2-1 against Reno. That first game was, man, I watched some of that on the internet, and it was pretty miserable. There were I think Odorizzi gave up 5 homers. They were at Reno, which has some of that elevation, some of that Coors Field kind of thing going on for it. Reno and Albuquerque are like two notoriously bad parks if you're a fly ball pitcher. And Jake Odorizzi is a fly ball pitcher, so he got hit pretty hard. They lost 13-1. They came back and won the second game, and then they lost last night, getting shut out. Tonight, Doug Davis is the guy who comes out. And that's what the season rests on, is Doug Davis. So, you know, in the end, Omaha has at most 2 games left on the year. And then Reno, if they win tonight, I mean, that's a series. So it's a best of 5. So 3 games will win it for them. That game is tonight at, I think, 7 o'clock. But it is in Omaha. So, you know, if you think that the minor league championships mean anything besides, you know, just getting a ring for the players, well, they've got a chance to go out there and make a comeback. And I hope they do. I mean, I think it's nice for them. I don't think it means anything at the big league level, but
I do think it shows an ability to overcome some adversity, which you will need at the big league level. And I know that you guys think I overplay those kinds of things, but I would be, I'd be interested to see what they pull out there. But Reno's looked good, man. You know, they got Mike Jacobs. He's killing the ball right now.
They have
AAA.
Mike Jacobs.
Mitch Meyer led the Omaha Royals to their one and only win in this series so far. That was pretty exciting, too. So,
yeah, let's go back to that about the adversity and stuff. I like to bring this up because, you know, I'm that type of guy. You know, you look at the Wranglers, the old Wranglers, and what they used to do. And they had guys like Gordon and Billy Butler, and they won everything. And that hasn't translated until now. So that's just something to be mindful of.
Well,
they can win there, but it doesn't translate necessarily to success in the majors.
And
as a team.
To your point, Mike, I think part of that comes from the standpoint that right now the team that's in Omaha, regardless of how many players are actually going to be up at the major league level at some point, that team isn't going to be the major league team next year. So
yeah, that's true.
I mean, part of overcoming adversity is you know, your singular experience as a player as part of that team, but also part of it is knowing, okay, hey, we're down by 5 runs, but we can bring in, you know, X pitcher and he's going to be okay. Or we have, you know, Will Myers is going to get a hit, and then, you know, Tony Abreu is going to get a hit, or whoever it is that's down there at the time. And then it's like, well, you know, it just kind of plays a different dynamic when you have different players and you're getting used to stuff. And, you know, it takes, in order to have that ability to overcome adversity, personally, I think it's going to take, you know, the Royals having their set team, having a couple, you know, a while to gel together. And hopefully, you know, that's what this year was about, because starting lineup that they have right now and that they had on opening day, mm-hmm. it's going to be, you know, of those 8, 9 players, whatever, it's going to be 7 or 8 of them are going to be exactly the same. So it's going to be pretty close. And hopefully, you know, that's part of what they were doing now, is kind of developing what Troy was talking about, that ability to overcome the adversity. They had the 12-game losing streak. They know losing streaks aren't going to last forever now. So maybe next year, if something happens and they lose 5 in a row, they say, hey, guys, remember we lost 12 last year and we came back and you know, we were almost close to 500, so this is no big deal, you know, even though they had another bad stretch after that. But, you know, hopefully that's what that can turn into. So.
Yeah, that's a good point, because, you know, the two guys, I mean, Odorizzi and Myers are the guys you would add from Omaha to next year's team, and that's pretty much it. I mean, there could be a couple of guys in the bullpen, but, yeah, for the most part, the team we have now is a lot of the guys that we're going to have next year, and that's... Yeah, that's something where you can come together as a team and you know who might be able to pick you up on a night if you're having an off night. Or even things like, you know, everybody in the infield knows they're throwing to Hosmer, and most of the time he's going to be able to make that pick. Or, you know, if you've got Alcides Escobar there and you're at second, you know he's going to be able to make the turn and things like that. So I think it counts for a little bit. I just don't think you can... say that success here is always going to be there. It's, you know, part of it. Just like everything else, there's always components.
Well, we'll see how much it translates over the next couple of years. So, got a question for you two.
Mm-hmm.
Yes or no, Jake Odorizzi pitches in another professional baseball game this year. Didn't say starts, just pitches in another professional baseball game this year.
I don't know. No, I say no, because Royals.
To me, I say no for the exact same reason, and Will Myers doesn't play, because I think at this point the Royals are sitting there saying, we're going to hold fast, and we're just going to prove to everybody that we know what we're doing, and we had this plan all along, and we never planned on bringing up Odorizzi and Myers, and this was the part of the plan, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this just reeks of that kind of Royals arrogance and stubbornness and stupidity that they seem to have when it comes to stuff like this, and that they just won't bring them up. So,
well, we're going to talk a little more about Will Myers here in just a second, so don't get too far on that tangent. But for some reason, my screens aren't automatically changing, so this is going to be fun. I'm going to have to pop the right screen up every time that one of you guys talks. I also think it's very interesting, a little behind the scenes here, that somehow the way I view it is I see everything of mine backwards, but when it comes out on YouTube, it's all the right way. So just a little interesting to me, but that's neither here nor there. You can, of course, follow us every week live. We always put our show out on all of our Twitter accounts, Casey Royal Man, Michael Engel, The Jeff Report, KC Baseball Vault, and Kings of Kaufman. So follow any or all of those, and you'll find out when we're recording. But we've been doing it at 11 on Saturdays the last couple weeks, and I think we might stay to that. We had originally thought noon, and we've been doing 11 as long as everybody's out of bed in time. I know, right? And I think this kind of works well. So, and if you got opinions on the show, shoot us an email, royalmanreport@gmail.com, and we're glad to read those. And don't forget, following this show live will be the ESR, the Echo Sports Report, and you can find that as well now on the Kansas City Baseball Vault feed, or as you used to know it, the Royal Man Report feed. It will be feeding through the same iTunes feed. So if you're not a football fan, because we're talking college football and NFL on there, if you're not a football fan, then go ahead and you can choose to download and not listen to that show, which is the preferred method, but make sure you're still getting the Kansas City Baseball Vault so you get all of your baseball goodness. A couple more things here before we take our first break. Lorenzo Cain is out for the season with a hamstring strain, and Bourgeois was brought up to fill back in. Not surprising it wasn't Will Myers. And it's not surprising because he's not on the 40-man. He's not getting on the 40-man. Mm-hmm. And if you want to know why he's not getting on the 40-man, then you need to go back and listen to last week's Kansas City Baseball Vault, because I think we spent about 10 minutes talking about why he will not be added to the 40-man and may not even be on the opening day roster next year. So if you missed that, please go back and listen to that show, and you can find out about all that. Is there a worse person that they could have brought up to play outfield than the man that they brought up, Mike?
Is there a worse person? Well, I mean, there are worse people. They could have went and found Uni again. But outfield. But yeah, he can play outfield. He has plus hands and plus hands.
Hey, we could have put you know, one of our first basemen out there, and let the other one play first base and find somebody new to DH, I guess, because that experiment has worked so well when it's happened. But we'll talk about that in a second too. We'll talk about Butler getting thrown out in his 100th home run. But
that was just weird. But yeah, I mean Bourgeois. I mean, there's 18 games left. I think most of the time they're going to try to platoon those guys. So David Lowe is probably going to be playing in center a lot of the time, which I think is okay. It gives them a chance to take a look at him and see, you know, what happens next year. I mean, next year, you know, the way Lorenzo Cain has played, he's played pretty well. I mean, his OPS was right there at league average, or his OPS plus. Right there at league average with everybody. He had 1.5 wins above replacement. You know, very viable guy to have as a starter in center field. And a lot of that value comes, you know, from his ability to, you know, hit with some power. He was 10 for 10 in stolen bases, had a decent average most of the time. But his defense is great too. The problem is that he's always had problems with injuries. In 2009, he made a play for a ball and hurt his knee and missed some time. In 2010, I don't think he missed much time, but you know, there was a play in Milwaukee where he ran right into the scoreboard, and I'm shocked he didn't miss time considering, you know, what's happened since. Last year he started the year, he had some groin issues in April, and then this year, you know, he was on a 60-day IL with that hip flexor. So, you know, all these injuries end up happening to, you know, his legs. And I think the Royals might see that as a reason to give him some time off. Maybe he only plays, you know, 2/3 of the games if he makes it through the full season. And so they'll want to have somebody like David Lowe around who can fill in. Maybe Cain only plays against lefties or and then most of the time against righties, and Lowe fills in that time, or, you know, Will Myers comes up at some point and they maybe swap them out. I mean, I don't know. But you can't go into next year and say that Lorenzo Cain's going to play 162 games, because odds are he's not. I mean, you kind of have to assume everybody's going to get hurt in a season, but when he has that kind of track record, yeah, I mean, I think it's safe to be aware of that and make a backup plan. As long as it's not Jason Bourgeois, that's the main thing. If it's that guy, something went wrong somewhere.
One half of the worst trade in Royals history, and I will say that, because even if
worse than
it's bad. I mean, they're going to end up trading away a top-end prospect for a guy that's not even going to be – with two guys that aren't even going to be with the team next year?
They weren't – I like the guys that we traded to Houston, but they weren't top prospects. They were top 30 maybe. I mean, that's, yeah, it's not like they traded –
lower end.
It's not like they traded Moustakas for him. You know, it's a little different. But still, I mean, you get up talent, you know, anything that's not just minor league filler – for guys that aren't even major league filler, yeah, that's a bad trade. I would still say the Brett Sabrehagen trade was the worst, but you know, that's just because it crushed me when I was a kid.
Well, I'm sure that our Twitter following could find some more of the worst trades. Maybe that's a.
I mean, that Tom trade wasn't very good either.
What's that?
Jermaine Dye trade was awful.
The Beltran trade wasn't very good.
Nephi Perez.
Let me get the Beltran. John Buck, Mark Tian.
Which turned into Chris Getz.
The last remnant of that is Chris Getz, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in defense of that trade, Mark Tian at least led the team in homers 1 year. So
this went 12 or something?
16. Yeah. Awesome. I love Mark Tian.
Speaking of which, Butler, I mean, it's probably not going to happen, but the dude's got an outside shot at 30. I mean, he has to get hot, but... it could happen.
Yeah, he went a whole month without hitting a homer, which you don't think about, but he hit like 350 in that time. You know, how concerned can you be? I mean, his average is up to 311 at this point. That's pretty darn good. And when you consider that, yeah, he'd still get the 30 home, that guy is a monster. I love Billy Butler.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just so funny how much Billy was hated in years past, and now he's beloved around here in Kansas City between the All-Star game and Buchanan and now this chase for the home run record for Kansas City. I mean, it's been pretty amazing. Staying on that, what the heck happened with – I had fallen asleep because I work early in the day. I think both of you do too. But the heck happened that he got thrown out of the game the other day and with an umpire that has had issues in Kansas City before – because he didn't rewind himself when talking to Jason Kendall once.
Yeah, that was just – the whole ending of that game on Thursday was strange because, you know, that was kind of the first thing that happened. Butler takes a pitch, and it looked high to me. Maybe that's just the angle that the Twins, you know, their camera has. You know, because they have that weird center field thing at Target Field. But it looked high, and he started asking about it, and ends up talking about it. You know, he just asked him about it, and, you know, they keep jawing about it. And then finally, Mike Estabrook, the same guy who took off his mask and stood right in front of Jason Kendall as he was in his crouch, gets in the way. You know, starts talking to Butler within the batter's box, you know, which just shouldn't be happening. I mean, it's not the ump show. And Butler says the magic word, and he goes. So Tony Abreu comes up with a 2-2 count, strikes out, you know, kills the rally. And then Lorenzo Cain gets hurt later, and then all kinds of weird stuff happens where the Royals end up putting Francoeur in center and Butler in – or not Butler. That would be something. Hosmer in right and Brian Peña at first base. And, you know, it didn't really matter. I don't think anybody in right field would have caught the ball that ended up winning the game. But still, you know, still having to do that stuff is kind of crazy. And they lost. So he got tossed, and you never really see Billy get tossed.
And what's sad about all that is that was also the game where he hits his 100th home run. So it's kind of lost in the...
No, that was last night.
Oh, that was last night. I'm sorry. I got my facts.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just not the weekend that Butler would have wanted at all, with the 100th home run coming in a loss and the mess with Cain and the argument. But Estabrook has got to be the most unprofessional umpire in all of baseball. And I don't understand how people like that keep a job. I don't get it. So,
yeah, it's a little weird.
Moving along here, I think actually we're going to go ahead and take a quick break because we're a little long right now. And then we got more Royals baseball coming up after the break. And then some general Kansas City stuff involving the K And then we're gonna end the show talking. We're gonna end this show talking about overused sayings in Kansas City sports. Some of those that had come into us on Twitter and some of our own favorites. So, and the one that I overlooked because it's become so part of our vernacular that we can't even get around it. So we'll be right back on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages. The Vault.
Kelly's Westport, it's the place where you buy beer. This guy came into the bar the other day and was telling me that they had friends in town and went down to that fancy bar district downtown. They went to one of those swanky no-ball cap bars and ordered a beer. Now, this wasn't one of those imported beers, wasn't even one of those microbrew deals. This bartender rang up the tab and he wanted $27 for three dadgum beers. $27 for some beers. That isn't right. That isn't fair. So he took them down to see us. We got them some nice big beers for half that price. Even had one of the ladies find a fella there. Got him some pizza. Listen, don't fall victim to those overpriced, no ball cap bars down there. You might as well take your money and throw it in the trash. Kelly's Westport, it's the place where you buy beer. Kelly's Westport Inn, tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
Hi, I'm a woman, and I listen to Bugcast Podcast.
Hola, soy una mujer, que oigo a Bugcast and Podcast.
And when I do, it makes me hornier than a hoot owl at midnight.
Cuando pensar de eso, toda la noche, como jodiendo a chingazos.
If you think Zac Efron's sexy, you haven't seen anything yet.
Si piensas de Zac Efron, es guapo, no ha mirado nada todavía.
Look out, David Beckham. You're not the only one with just your underwear on.
Cuidado, David Beckham. Tú eres el único que no tienes calzones también.
Bugcast makes me feel so good. Jealous much?
Me siento muy bien con Bugcast. Me hacen celosos.
Listen to a new episode of Bugcast, released every Monday.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Find us on Twitter, Kansas City KC Baseball Vault, Kings of Kaufman, Echo Network, all sorts of fun places. Of course, find us individually. I'm Troy Olson, a.k.a. KC Royal Man. You've got Michael Engel in the middle. He's at Kings of Kaufman and at Michael Engel. And then, of course, on the end is the Jeff Report, Jeff Herr. We are Kansas City's number one sports podcast. And continuing to rock it out all year long with our baseball stuff and then adding the Echo Sports Report, which you can also get for your football needs to get us through the off season.
Good stuff.
So, what's that?
I said good stuff.
Good stuff. Yeah, I needed a drink of water there. That was.
I'm practicing my Jason Parks drop-ins.
Yeah.
Someone's got to do them now because up and in's gone.
Yeah, we'll have to get him on again pretty soon. As soon as I get the Skype stuff figured out with Jeff's computer, we'll get him on again. He's definitely willing to come on. He was on the fantasy show for Baseball Prospectus the other week, and it was a little odd, but it was cool to hear him back in a podcast because
he doesn't strike me as a fantasy guy.
I think they just were looking at long term keepers, and so he was included in that. Moving right along, this cannot be good news, and I didn't add this note. I think this was a Michael Engel note, so I'll let Mike take this one away. But the Royals say they want to keep Hochaver.
Yeah. I mean, that tells you exactly what I think about it. It's Bob Dutton had a really, really good piece in the Star. I think it was on Monday, I want to say, and talking about, you know, the Royals still see him as somebody who can reach that potential that they see, and I don't know. The thing that got me riled up about it is Ned Yost was throwing out these different comparisons, and he said, oh, well, guys like Kevin Millwood and Jason Schmidt and Jorge De La Rosa, they had some struggles, and then they finally figured it out. So I really wanted to take a look and see, okay, well, how much struggle did those guys actually have? And it turns out that, you know, Schmidt and Millwood really didn't have that much struggle when they were younger. I mean, not to the extent that Hochaver did. So I'm not really sure what Ned Yost was doing there other than just pulling names out. The thing with De La Rosa, yeah, he did have some struggles, and we saw that when he was with the Royals and you know, when he was with the Mariners, or not the Mariners, the Brewers. And, yeah, he had trouble, but the trouble could be pinpointed to a very easy, you know, reason. He walked way too many people. That's not the problem with Hochaver. You know, nobody knows what the problem is with Hochaver. You saw De La Rosa change, you know, he was able to get his control in line and had a couple of good years. And you can't just make that same change with Hochaver. He doesn't walk that many. He walks, you know, right around league average. He walks about 3 per 9 innings. He strikes out about 6.5. You know, he's right there on the peripherals as a pretty league average pitcher. But there's something, and it's every single year, that he just can't do to be a good pitcher. And, you know, we've all seen all the games where he's gone out, you know, the 80 pitch complete game and the 13 strikeout game with no walks, and then this year where he outdueled David Price and all that stuff. And he's capable of those kind of games, but for every one of those, there's two games where he just goes out and wets himself. And you can't take a guy like that and consider him somebody who you can rely on. I mean, there's no consistency there. And, you know, the Royals have tried so many different things to fix him, and they clearly can't figure it out because they've said he's tipping his pitches. They said that you know, different mechanic changes. This time they want him to not use the cutter. And there's a really interesting thing on Royals Review where Jeff Zimmerman was looking at how well he did statistically in games where he used his cutter to varying degrees. And it turns out when he used his cutter more frequently, he actually performed better. He struck out more, walked less, gave up less hits and less runs. So the Royals are completely backwards in this. And I'm just ready to cut bait. I mean, I think when it comes to arbitration, they're going to have – it's going to be about $5 million probably that they'll pay him. And that's not a big hit, except for that it's $5 million that you can spend elsewhere. So there's an opportunity cost there. If the $5 million that you give Luke Hochaver is something that prevents you from going and getting Brandon McCarthy or Edwin Jackson or whoever, well, that's a problem because you're picking a guy who very clearly at age 29 has shown that he can't get it at this level, and you're picking him over other options who could be at least at the same level as he is and have a lot more opportunity to improve.
And
so,
if this is where I may interject,
sure.
Not necessarily completely directed at Luke Hochaver, but you talked about how he's probably going to be, you know, $5 million in arbitration next year.
Mm-hmm.
This is just one of the things that I just don't know that I'll ever get about baseball, where for whatever reason it seems like just being in the league
mm-hmm.
and being healthy for X period of time, you know, at some point in your career guarantees you're going to make $10 million a year. You know, I mean, they place so much emphasis on player valuation and evaluating and scouting and all this stuff. But monetarily, which is the big reason that every team cites about being competitive and they need to spend money and all that stuff, but they just can't seem to value players correctly and with money. I mean, you look at all the other sports, you know, and with an example here with the Chiefs, you know, Scott Pioli let Brandon Carr go because the market was going to pay $10 million, but Scott Pioli didn't think they were worth that much. But then you look at, I mean, the Royals are just going to pay Luke Hochaver $5 million because they're just going to say, oh, well, you know, he's been healthy and he's given us almost mm-hmm. 200 innings the last couple of years. And, you know, we really think he's still got that potential and all that stuff. It's just, it's frustrating when it's right there. It's just like you said, it's right there in front of him. I mean, the guy's got a career ERA of 5.3. He's pitched 752 innings. And, I mean, where's the consistency? Because the Royals, I mean, I can't think off the top of my head of a time when the Royals say, like about Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer, they said, oh, after about 1,000 at-bats, you really kind of get to see who they really are as a hitter. Well, mm-hmm. I'm not sure where their methodology lies in terms of innings for a pitcher, but it's got to be at least 750. So, yeah. Point is, they know who Luke Kochhaber is. There's nothing coming. Right. There's nothing. We're not going to be surprised by anything anymore. He's not going to be a good pitcher. We've talked about this on this show over and over, and that's just what's so disappointing about the Royals, because they're going to pay him. I have no doubt in my mind they're going to pay him $5 million, maybe more, to be honest with you. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, there was that year where they gave Kyle Davies, I think the arbitration figure that was reported first was $2.3 million, and everybody's like, well, okay, fine, you got to give him that. And it turns out, no, it was $3.2 million, so it's a whole $1 million more. I mean,
I mean, it's almost like the Royals have say, you know what, we know we're behind the eight ball on this money thing in this league, and so we're going to pay Luke Kochhaber $5 million because if there's a 90% chance that he sucks like he has the rest of his career, then, you know, not much is going to change. But if there's a 10% chance that he turns the corner, we're going to look really smart. And the Royals just want to look really smart, even though they never have. I mean, yeah. I can't remember the last time the Royals looked smart in doing anything.
So, just the draft. But maybe. That doesn't mean anything right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how much they look smart as they look. I don't know. I mean, I guess you could say the draft. I'll give you the draft. I'll let you have that one.
He'll let you have it, Mike, just so you know.
Not you, Mike, the Royals. Yes. I'll let the Royals have that one.
Did anybody go out to the game last night after everything that went on, which I'm going to touch on, too, here in just a second?
No.
I guess I wanted to talk about the minor leaguers being up here, but I really don't have any information on it. I call high school football on Friday nights and watched somebody get blown out again last night. I don't remember who it was at this point, but so I didn't get a chance to see much of the minor leaguers coming up, but I was curious if any of you guys had a chance to talk with any of them. Let's see. Last week we talked a lot about the 40-man. Here's a question I had that ties into our earlier conversation. Jeremy Jeffers and Borgeau are both on the 40-man, and they're both not very good. Both coming over in trades that Dayton wanted to have work out. I think Jeffers would be okay to let go at this point. He was the fourth piece of the Greinke trade, and a piece that they made a big deal about, that if they didn't get him, that the trade was going to fall apart, and he's ended up being the least important part of it. Do you see those two guys being part of the Royals team next year? Jeff?
I mean, I say yeah. I mean, that's not because I think they should. I absolutely don't. But, I mean, at this point, you still have to just kind of fall back on it's the Royals. I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to, every piece that they get from a trade, they're going to hold on to as long as humanly possible. Every player that they think has even the slightest bit of potential, they're going to hold on to as long as possible, to their detriment most times. So in this case, they're going to keep Bourgeois around. They're going to give him opportunities that should be going to other players. And Jeremy Jeffers is going to be around too, because even if Odorizzi comes up and is the pitcher we think he can be, and with Lorenzo Cain and Alcides Escobar and everybody else doing really well, I mean, that Greinke trade, I wouldn't say it's a win for the Royals because Zach Greinke's really good, and he was good for the Brewers, but I think it's even. I think both sides came out just as good as they should have on a trade like that, but the Royals are still going to hold themselves to, well, we've got to make sure we hit on Jeremy Jeffers too, because we've got to make sure that trade was worth it. And they cannot get past stupid, stubborn things like that. And we've seen it too many times. So if you ask me, I mean, they're both going to be back.
I think Jeffers more than Bourgeois. And I'm not sure if Jeffers is necessarily deserving, but you know, he's a guy that can throw 100 miles an hour and has a pretty wicked curveball when he can actually locate it. But that's... that's the problem, is can he locate it? If you look at what he's done at the big leagues this year, his ERA is incredible. It's 0.87. But, like I said, it's incredible because in 10 innings, he's got given up 10 hits. He's walked 9. He's given up 4 runs, but only one of them was earned. So, you know, that ERA should be higher. But I think anytime you have a guy who can throw 100, teams are going to look at him. They're going to give them a second look. Bourgeois, no, I don't see any reason for them to keep him around. There's a lot of players that they need to add to the 40-man to protect them from the Rule 5. And if the decision comes down to keeping somebody like Tim Melville, who has some potential, versus Jeremy Jeffress, then it's a tough decision. But if it's Bourgeois in that conversation, well, he's – you know, really not necessary. I mean, they have enough other guys that can fill in a spot like that. Even if they just signed him a minor league free agent, you know, who is better than Jason Bourgeois, I mean, they could do that. So I don't think Bourgeois is. I think Jeffress is probably a 80% chance that they'll keep him on the 40-man. I don't know that they necessarily should, but I think, yeah, the trade comes into it, that they don't want to just give him up, you know, because he could figure it out tomorrow and go to some other team, and then, you know, the Royals are still going to feel ridiculous because they gave him up. And that's a big reason why they haven't given up on players, because, well, this guy went out and did well, and this guy went out and did well after we got rid of him. And, you know, which is just a silly way of thinking about it, but that's the way they think about it. So, you know, I guess that's just what they do. You know, they're the Royals. And they're terrified of making a mistake like that.
I hope that they let both of them go. We have way too much talent in the minor leagues to be wasting time on guys like that. A guy that I would not mind keeping around next year if he stays a bullpen guy, and like we were talking about last week, who knows, we could have Chen, Hochaver, and Mazzaro as part of the Royals bullpen. I think he's really started to come into his own as a reliever. It seems to be working out for him. And really, you know, if that works, he's a longtime pitcher. He's got a veteran attitude. He seems to have fixed his attitude. He had a really bad attitude a couple of years ago after that 13-1 game. You know, after that all happened, I thought for sure his career in Kansas City, and I think everybody else did too, thought his career in Kansas City was done. And then here you are a couple of years later, and he may be a critical part of the bullpen next year because he's a guy that just seems to get the job done when he's in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's done some adjustments, and he's been pretty good in Omaha when he was coming up, and then now he's had a couple of good games. He's kind of had some Luke Hochaver to him too, in that, you know, he comes out and has some really good starts and some really good appearances, and then his next one he kind of stinks, but... You know, I think there's some ability there. I don't know what they're going to do. They have a lot of arms, a lot of guys that they may want to keep around. So, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, in the end, we're talking about guys who are like back-end bullpen guys that, you know, they're easily replaceable. So if they do happen to get rid of somebody, you know, they can find somebody. They can, you know, call somebody up. They can, you know, go sign somebody for really cheap. You know, any of that stuff's possible.
Any thoughts on that one, Jeff?
Not really. I kind of agree. I mean, I don't really spend much time worrying about the future of Ben Mazzaro. So, I mean, he can be a part of this bullpen, and if he is, that's great. You know, I mean, the only thing that speaks positive to me about the Ben Mazzaro situation is that... You know, the Royals, I don't know if they had much of a choice, but they at least didn't try and keep sticking with him as the starting pitcher. They moved on. They said, hey, we're going to put you in the bullpen. We're going to see how you do here. You know, maybe they keep him around next year, maybe not, whatever. I mean, at the very least, that's a slightly good sign that they're, you know, that they didn't try and pull a Davies or a Hochaver and just keep him as a starter. But then again, I mean, they didn't spend a first-round pick on him, so...
Just as we go out to break here, Sal Perez is awesome. Not that you didn't already know that, but Sal Perez is awesome. He just had the longest hitting streak in the history of a catcher for the Kansas City Royals snapped, tying him with Porter for the team lead. Mike, help me out with the first name there.
Daryl Porter.
So the streak is snapped. Guy's batting .312, and they wrote it up. I can't remember which author this was, but the way it was wrote up on the Royals website was his batting average has stumbled to .312. OG, it stumbled to .312. Mike and I were kind of talking about this before Jeff got here, before we started the show, and it's what could have it been like if Sal Perez could have been here all year, and even a little bit Lorenzo Cain, but especially Perez. Jeff, how important to this team is Sal Perez?
I mean, I think he's very important, and I said before that I think at the beginning of the season, before Perez got injured, that, you know, before Hosmer laid his egg, but, you know, between Hosmer and Sal Perez, Hosmer is very well could be, and, well, you know, at this point, it's a lot closer than it was before, I suppose, but is probably going to be the better player. But then the question is, who's going to be more valuable to this team? And I think Sal Perez is going to be, even if Hosmer is kind of that. It's hard to say. It's weird to say that Hosmer could be an MVP-level talent and Sal Perez still be more valuable, but, I mean, that would obviously make him an MVP-level talent as well. But, I mean, just the dynamic of this team kind of changes because you don't have a hole in that lineup anymore. You've got Sal Perez. I mean, the dude, it's so weird that he's batting .312, and he's only walking 4% of the time. So he doesn't walk very often, but he's only striking out 7% of the time. I mean, the guy just swings at everything, and he makes crazy good contact. And I mean, we've talked about BABIP on this show before, and his is only .302. I mean, I say only, but league average is right around .300. So it's not like he's, you know, even Gordon last year in his great year, he only hit .303 or whatever, and his was still like .340 was his BABIP. So, I mean, he could be an even better hitter than people predicted, I think he will be a better hitter than people predicted, but even better than what people were thinking he, you know, could have been at his ceiling. Who knows? But I mean, it's still important to remember that even combined with this year and last year, he's barely played over 100 games and has not played over a full season. So I mean, it's very possible that he's just a really good hitter, makes lots of really good contact, which is what it looks like, but given this season and then a full season last year, you know, next year, we'll see we'll know what kind of a really good hitter he is, because pitchers won't have the excuses anymore of not having seen him very much. They'll be able to plan for him. They'll know more of his tendencies. They'll know more of what he swings at. So you got to wonder if there's going to be some sort of an Eric Hosmer or Mike Moustakas like type of regression. Hopefully not, but even still, I mean, I think he brings such a different dynamic to this game that regardless of how much he regresses in his batting average and all his peripherals, he's still not an easy out either way. The defense, I mean, I heard a stat that he was leading the Royals in pickoffs. He's got more. Or he's about to come up on the Royals record in pickoffs, and not for a season, but for his career. And he's done it all in less than a season's worth of games. I mean, the guy is phenomenal. The teams are going to start realizing, if they realize about his offense, they're definitely going to start realizing about his defense. No, you can't run on him. You can't get good leadoffs on him. I mean, that's going to impact the game, I think, more than is something that's really quantifiable. But it's definitely something that I think we're going to notice. And to have him for the full season, I mean, who knows how things would have changed with him and Cain if they would have been healthy at the beginning of the year. I don't know if it would have made a huge difference, but I definitely think it would have made a difference. And I think going forward, he's one of the top three most important players on this team.
Well, and I think the pickoff thing you're still going to see, maybe one or two less a year, but people fall asleep at first base, and it's a long season in baseball, and third base too, especially when there isn't really a steal, you know, attempt that's going to be going on. You'll see players kind of take their lead if the bases are loaded or something, just because they're ready and they're not really, you know, paying as good of attention to the game as they should. And he's still going to get those pickoffs in that position. I think the last one he got was a bases loaded pickoff on third base. I think you're still going to see that happen. Too many players are just, it's a long season, and I think they forget where they are and what's going on. So we'll see. But we're going to be right back. We've got a couple more things to hit on, and then we'll be out of here today. So one final break here, and we'll be back right on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages. The Vault.
Hey, it's Ben for Kelly's Westport Inn. Do high gas prices got you down? Well, don't worry about it. Hop on the bus to Kelly's Westport Inn and save some jingle jangle as you drink until you're blingle blangle. Kelly's has the best open-air roof in town with beer and drink prices that are cheaper than at the pump. That's for sure. There's plenty of TVs to watch the soccer and the football games this summer. Plus, there's someone for everyone, and you can find him or her at Kelly's. Hearts and smoochies. So check out Kelly's Westport Inn, and you'll have more change to fill up your range, Rover. This has been Ben, Kelly's Westport Ben, saying smell you laters.
Monday Night Hike.
In the last 2 years, all of the teams in the NFL, with the exception of the Chiefs, have made some sort of upgrade at quarterback or have maintained their franchise player.
If you're telling me this year in the draft that the Chiefs have the opportunity to trade 2 first-round picks along with their second-round pick both years for the number one overall pick to take Matt Barkley, I'm jumping on that. I am. Maybe I'm alone in that. Maybe most people think that's too much. I don't.
Listen to Monday Night Pikes live every Monday at econetwork.com.
And welcome back into this final segment of the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Thank you for joining us here today. And we're getting ready to roll into the Echo Sports Report. We'll have it on after this. Of course, it'll come in a separate download for those of you that are baseball only. And so you'll have that to look forward to. A little bit of sadness in Kansas City yesterday. I love Kansas City. I do, you know, I'm not originally from here, but this has always been a city that I've liked and spent a lot of time in on vacations. And then, of course, I've lived here for several years now, and I really do consider this my home. And it was very sad yesterday to hear that there was a suicide attempted murder in Lot A of the K yesterday. First off, I'm really glad that nobody else was hurt, and apparently it was some sort of crime of romance is what the initial reports are. We'll see if any of that turns out to be true. What makes me sad is I park in that parking lot, and the parking attendant that was shot, I'm pretty sure that, you know, I've dealt with her quite a bit. So that's a little too close for me, and I just want to wish that family the best and hope that they are able to that she's able to pull through and that everything works out for the best, because that was a really sad situation. Just take care of each other, folks. We're a better city than this. We have a bomb threat from a former Chiefs super fan that just makes all the super fans look bad, and fortunately nothing came out of that. And then the shooting not long after that, plus Texas and North Dakota State had bomb threats that evacuated. We just got to be better as a country and definitely be better as Kansas City. So that's kind of my tirade on that. If you guys want to add anything to that, you're more than welcome.
It's a weird day yesterday.
Very weird day.
Yeah, not much more can be added to that.
Going from that to something positive that I actually skipped over in our early notes and didn't carry it through, but Brandon McCarthy was released from the hospital, and he actually visited his teammates, and his teammates said he was the same jovial guy that he's always been. He was working on the crossword puzzle, apparently, in the locker room, he was getting suggestions on how to screw it up for whoever's crossword it was. And he said he was just going to fill in all the boxes with different kinds of smiley faces. So
I saw somebody, I don't follow Brandon McCarthy on Twitter, but somebody retweeted him. I can't remember who it was. And I saw he sent out a tweet where he said something like, "The doctor says that I now could have the future of being one of those people that sends out inspirational tweets all day." So, yeah. Something like that. I mean, so he's definitely still in good humor about it.
And he added a frowny face to it as well, which I think is fun. But, yeah, I just pulled up his Twitter feed, and I like this guy. I want to see this guy almost for the Twitter alone. but also because he can pitch. But one of the other things when he got released, and this is in all caps, which makes it even better, because that's, of course, an intentional decision. He says, well, if being discharged from the hospital isn't the best time to ask about a threesome, then I'm fresh out of ideas.
Did you see his wife's response to that? Did you see his wife's response to that? She said, because she's on Twitter, too, and she's funny as well. And it was, you know, we talked about her kind of going through the emotional process of all this while he was in the hospital. But he tweeted that, and then she tweeted, she goes, I will hit a man with a brain injury.
Oh, that's funny.
Or something along those lines. And she, like, she capitalized things and stuff. So, obviously, they're, you know, they're beautiful people inside and out. And I would love to have him here with, like, Jeremy Guthrie and Ryan Verdugo. And I just think the – and Will Smith. I think the comedy that could ensue on Twitter, I don't even think the Royals could prevent it from happening. It would be awesome. Plus, Brandon McCarthy, I think, figuring that he comes back from this injury fine, and, you know, we talked in great depth about what he could do as far as being, you know, wincing on the mound, and if he loses a mile or two of his speed, and if he loses a little bit of his control because he's afraid, you know, what that'll have to do with his career. And, you know, I guess if you want to look at it from a business standpoint, and this is not me feeling this way necessarily because I'm not this heartless, but let's be real. Baseball is a pretty heartless business. And there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to be afraid to go after him this offseason because he's going to be an unknown quantity, which speaks perfectly to signing with the Royals. So
this is where the misfits end up.
Yes. This is where the broken toys come to get fixed.
I think that is 2013 slogan, Kansas City Royals baseball, the island of misfit toys.
Oh, you know what? I didn't add this to the sheet, but let's touch on this.
We can talk on that,
Because, first off, Mike had a great tweet on this, and coming off of a Curtis Kitchen tweet, but I forget what the company name is, and Mike, I'll let you fill this in if you want.
I think it was VMI.
Yeah, it's VM something. They have been fired. They were the company that's come up with the slogans the last 4 years, and let's be real, folks, not one of them has been good. Major League Moments, yes, we are the Royals. We do have moments of Major League talent, and our time, boy, was that fun. And now, and I don't know if this last one's theirs too, which is Be a Royal, but this one's just set up to just be a Royal, lose a game in the ninth inning, be a Royal, choke away, you know, never make the playoffs. The slogans have been awesomely bad the last 4 years, and this company deserved to get fired.
Yeah, I mean, slogans are pretty historically crappy anyway, for the most part. I remember in, like, the late 80s, there was Royals Baseball, It's a Hit. And it was like this, Royals Baseball, It's a Hit. And then the next year, it was Royals Baseball, Catch the Thrill. And it was the same, like, the same jingle, Royals Baseball, Catch the Thrill. It's like, come on. It's like, try.
And there was the Royals Fever, Catch It, or whatever that one was. Very similar one. That was in my time. Early 2000s or something, and True Blue or something like that.
There is no
mutant. True Blue Tradition.
Yeah,
that next year was like New Blue Tradition.
That was for the 25th anniversary or something, wasn't it? Of the World Series.
Yeah, True Blue and New Blue weren't that bad. Yeah. I kind of enjoyed those. I wish they would have saved New Blue. New Blue Tradition would have been perfect for this year. And, I mean, our time would have been fine if the team wouldn't have came out and laid a 12-game losing streak egg to start the year. I mean,
yeah, but I think it's the thing that was most telling to me, though, was that in part of the statement, I think the Royals said something that they acknowledge that fans are losing patience and they're growing weary and all of that. So I think maybe there's some self-awareness coming up that they kind of know that, you know, it's getting a little old. But in the end, I don't think a slogan makes that much difference. I mean, we talked a little bit earlier in the year about if the Our Time slogan was adding pressure, and I don't know. I mean,
it absolutely was.
A lot of how?
Because
how? I just don't see
you're
how.
You're on Twitter. How can you say how? You don't think that gets back to the players and stuff?
No. No, then we need – then this could be the thing that turns it around. I mean, if they come out and they win 90 games next year, do you say that that's because they found the right slogan?
No, but it helps.
Because they changed companies?
It's something that they were grabbing onto. Those guys were using the R time in their tweets, in their, you know, when they were talking. It was something that they definitely grabbed onto and definitely wanted it to be part of this year, that they wanted it to be this year. And we've cut Jeff off about six times, so Jeff, go ahead.
I think there was pressure for this organization to take that step forward this year. And I think R time was a calculated move that was miscalculated by this company that just got fired or whatever, to try and kind of build off that. And it was a bold move that absolutely 100% did not pay off. And I don't know that our time added to that pressure so much as it was a result of it. I think you're right in that the players couldn't handle the pressure, but I don't know that it was because of our time as a slogan so much as it just was. There was a lot of pressure to begin this season because this was the highest expectations we've had in 20 years, maybe.
I'll tell you this, going out to Kauffman as much as I do and used to be able to stand down on that first deck and talk to the ushers were feeling the pressure from the fans. So if nothing else, it was definitely a pressure that was put on the team from the fan perspective. So it's hurt the team as far as sales has gone because the team expected so much, or the fans expected so much more, and that slogan just added to it. And it got the fans a higher high than we've been to in a long time. With this team having all the parts of a good team and the All-Star game and everything else, and then here we are again, one All-Star that we can't even get into the home run derby at home and everything else. So it was really disappointing. I think that was – the slogan was a great idea. And I told I was having beers with Sam and a couple of the K-Crew girls and some of the game day folks after a game one day, and – first time I'd ever met this woman, mind you, and she's one of the game day folks, and she, we got to talking about R time somehow, and oh, somebody was wearing the R time shirt. I said that's the one Royals T-shirt that will never be in my closet, and that I never want to have. I said because that was such a piss poor, horrible idea, and she's like, why? And she like took offense to it, you know, definitely. And so I explained it to her, and by the time I was done, she was pretty much on our side of the fence. It's just. It was a bad idea, and it was something that everybody on that team, from the administration through the players, bought into, and it didn't work out. So it was just bad idea all the way around. Let's on that note, this is actually a good transition. Let's talk a little bit about overused sayings in Kansas City sports, and this is something that I know Jeff and I were really kind of got into on Twitter the other day, and Jeff said this has to be a talking point for one of the two shows this week, and I said we'll put it at the end of the Royal Man Report because it'll tie in a little bit with football too, because there's a couple of football slogans that may or may not still be in use. But the conversation started, you know, what are those slogans that just make you cringe, make the hair on the back of your neck stand up? And for me, the worst one is he's turned the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Kirksaver has turned the corner. Every time they say that, you know what I hear in my head, guys? I hear the song Spin Me Right Round, because that's how I feel when they say turn the corner, because that's what you're doing with Luke Kirksaver. You just spin around and spin around and spin around. We have turned so many corners with him. Is there anybody else notable that you can think of that they've used that slogan with in Kansas City sports?
Not that slogan, but there was always the good stuff about Kyle Davies. Oh, he's got good stuff. It's like, great, but he still sucks.
Yeah.
Oh, but he's got good stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Michael Tucker had a real pretty swing, but he stunk, so it doesn't matter.
Brian Bannister is great in day games.
Yes, that was another great one. I forgot about that one.
Like,
that's
why
awesome.
There's no statistical connection to that. Just doesn't matter.
Jimmy Gobble came up as a 20-year-old and beat the Yankees or whatever in his first ever game. I think it was the Yankees or whoever. And so, you know, he's obviously got the potential. I mean, that's just, it's all over for the Royals.
What was your favorite, Jeff?
The good stuff. Turn the corner might be my favorite. I guess favorite most hated quote, whatever that means. But if we're gonna open it up to everything outside of the Royals as well, I mean, the Wright 53, I think, is a fun one. Whatever that even means. They never.
Is that one dead now, though?
I mean, it was something they latched onto at the beginning, and as unaware as the Royals and Chiefs are of, or as the lack of self-awareness both organizations have, I think the Chiefs are a little bit less. Like, they have a little bit more. They have a little bit more self-awareness than the Royals, I should say, and so they kind of drop that off a little bit more. But then to take place of that Wright 53, it was. They've never kind of had a saying about it, but basically their philosophy and things they've kind of come back to have hinted towards the whole trust the process moniker, which might be the all-time best. I mean, that will definitely go down as it's got to be the one of the best.
That's the one that I got plunked with on Twitter after I opened this up, and I didn't even think about it because it has become such a part of our vernacular. Yeah. Such a part of the ridiculousness of Kansas City sports, both for the Chiefs and the Royals, that you just hear that phrase and it's just like, yeah, trust the process. But I guess for me, the other two with turn the corner and the good stuff, that they just both make me cringe. Like, trust the process doesn't make me cringe because it's such a joke. You know, it's not something that the Royals have really said as much as it's something that the fans have said. You know, going off of him talking about having this process and what have you, and everything's a process in sports and whatever. But man, just I hear people in day-to-day say something about somebody turning the corner or having good stuff or whatever, not even sports-related. It just makes me cringe because I'm so tired of hearing that. But definitely the most hated phrase, according to everybody on Twitter, is trust the process. And I think that one's going to stay long after the Royals' current administration has come and gone because, let's be real, at some point this administration's not going to be here for good or for bad. But it's that phrase, I think, will hang on forever.
And I think a lot of that just stems from, at least for me, it stems from the frustration of the fact that, and we talked about it on the Bill Fisher show on the 1510 Baseball Vault, where the Royals just have this weird thing where they just assume, because they're all baseball guys, that this is the way it goes and this is how it has to happen and things like that, you know, that there can't be any shortcuts and there can't be, you know, they can't find any sort of a route that nobody else has. There has to be a certain way that you do things and there has to be a way that the Royals do it, and it just takes, you know, it has to take 10 steps, you know, it can't take 8 to get from point A to point B. And whereas other teams like the Rays and the Rangers say, I don't care how many steps it took this team to do it, we're going to do it this way, and if it's going to take us less steps, then we're just going to get there sooner than the rest of them. And I think that's what's most frustrating, and that's what, to me, that's what trust the process really sums up, that I just can't, that just really infuriates me about the Royals.
Well, I should have started this a lot sooner, but let me see if I can get this to work. I'm going to try to incorporate a YouTube video into our discussion here today, and so I'll probably end up cutting this out of the other because it's going to fail badly, but I don't even know if I can search YouTube within here. But, you know, every time I hear those things, I'll show you how I feel here in just a second here.
Is this going to be the fail horn from The Price is Right?
No, let me see if I can get this.
Wah, wah, wah.
That's right. You get baseball discussion and sound effects on the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Okay, click on the YouTube.
That's a little like kingsofcoffin.com, folks. Send them an email. Let them know how much you like the Price is Right drops.
I do requests. So yes. If you want the Family Feud, the missed answer, I can do that. Okay, that's...
Click on the YouTube link up at top if you guys can't see what... Oh.
I can't see anything.
Okay. There should be a black screen on your YouTube link. I'm going to go ahead and play this, and I don't know if it's going to go into the recording or not. I guess we'll find out when I run this through later today.
I didn't want to get myself into a situation where all I had to go out there was all right, and I left swinging the bats well, so I wanted my left-handed hitters to hit.
Did you consider Brett for Miller with the bases loaded in the seventh?
No, no, don't ask me all these stupid ass questions. No. And in the
We're getting a really bad echo, so I'll play this for a second longer. But this is about how I feel every time that I hear any of those sayings that we were talking about. It just makes me want to grab my inner Hal McCray and spread the office.
Throwing things.
Yeah, if this doesn't play out, I'll edit it down, and our listeners will know that we didn't get the Hal McCray bit. But if you haven't seen it, go look it up. And join the Kansas City Baseball Kansas City Baseball Historical Society on Facebook. Our good friends from over there, they were posting great manager rants. So you can definitely check those out. What's that, Jeff?
I was still watching the video. The guy that walked by with the bloody cheek, that was my favorite.
Could you imagine if that would happen today? He would have been fired, arrested, and sued.
Probably in on SportsCenter for at least a day. If not a day and a half, even.
But enough of that. Anyways, so I think that's where we're going to wrap it up today with a little angry Hal McCray. Hopefully this does play through into the video. If not, maybe I'll just I'll add it on. I'll grab the audio and I'll put it at the end of the video for all of you that listen in that are subscribers and what have you. So I think that'll wrap it up. Best wishes go out to Chris Candler, who hurt himself surfing. He's in the hospital right now. We hope he makes a full recovery. He'd asked to come on today. I sent him a link, but he didn't join us. So maybe he couldn't get it to work in the hospital. Who knows? He might be really, really high on some good painkillers right now.
Yeah, I don't think the technology was matching up is what it seemed like to me.
Yeah.
So, or maybe he just did, you know, who knows?
Jeff, any final thoughts?
No, I think we've covered most of it. Mike.
Kind
of winding down.
I don't like Luke Ochaver anymore.
I don't either.
I like him.
Yeah. Well, for Luke Ochaver and for Jeff Herr and Michael Engel, I'm Troy Olson, and this was the Kansas City Baseball Ball. We'll see you next Saturday. Have a great week, everybody, and take care of each other. Be good to each other. Go Royals.